This is an interview with Geraldine Hinkle on November 11, 1985. It's taking place in her office in Helen C. White Hall. The interviewer is Julie Nelson.
Looks like it's going fine.
Right.
So, maybe, can I just start out with some background information on yourself? Because I'm not quite sure just when you were in the department and what your position was.
Yes. I came to the department in the middle of 1939 as what was then called a senior clerk stenographer. The senior person in the office was Alma Bridgman. I'm sure you've heard of her. She had run the department for years. She was also an instructor. And she had a title of executive secretary, which didn't exist anywhere else in the university, but had been made up for her by Dr. Ely. And she ran the department for years and years, and I was one of the underlings. And I had a very happy time there. I went there from a job in the Dean of Women's office. And economics was much more interesting, frankly, because it was a greater mix of people. I knew absolutely nothing about economics, but I picked up the jargon. I still don't know anything about economics, but I know the words. And I was there until 1943, when Dr. Whitty was tapped by President Roosevelt to head the National War Labor Board in Detroit. That had started out as a national movement or organization from Washington, and they soon found that didn't work. And so they set up regions around the country. This was one of the last regions to be set up and was the only one that consisted of just one state, Michigan, because Michigan was almost 100% war production. So Mr. Whitty went to be the head of the National War Labor Board in Detroit and said to me, why don't you come along? And I thought that sounded sort of interesting, and they told me I could have a leave of absence from the department. So I went with him and stayed a year, at which time I was very glad to come back to Madison. Detroit during the wartime was not a pleasant place to live. But Mr. Whitty went off to Washington then to the national offices. But before that, I had come back. I just went in one day and said to him, I want to go home. And he said, oh, gee. He was a sweet little man. So I came back then, and I stayed in the department until the end of 1954. By which time I was past 40 years old and feeling very much in a rut, that middle-aged restlessness that comes to most people, I think, and many aren't able to do anything about it. I was, since I was single. And I had spent my summer vacations for about 5 years on dude ranches out in the West. I loved to ride. And I would come back every fall filled with eyes full of tears at leaving the mountains, and finally decided I would go and live where I could look at the mountains. So I quit the job in the economics department. Miss Bridgman thought I was absolutely mad. She wouldn't even talk about it for days because she couldn't believe it. But I had decided, and I went out there and took a job in an advertising agency, which was a whole new world.
Oh, what state did you?
Colorado. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you. To Denver. I chose that because a former roommate of mine was living there, and I could stay with her while I looked around. And all I had in mind was that it was going to be something different. I didn't know what. So I worked for an advertising agency, had a grand time, less money than I was making here at first, but they were very good to me. And after I'd been there about 3.5 years, Miss Bridgman wrote and said she wanted to retire, and had I had my fling now, and was I ready to come home? Which made me sit down and do some thinking about the rest of my life. And I realized that what I hadn't admitted to myself before was that I never really felt permanently in the business world. I had been in the academic world for all of my life, you see, either going to school or working in a school, and that was where I really was happiest, that I didn't see myself growing old in the business world. So I came back. She retired in mid-1968, 1958. And I came back and sort of took over the department, and I don't even remember what my title was, and had a couple of younger helpers. And I stayed with that until Mr. Young was appointed Dean of Letters and Science. And he said, "Why don't you come along?" And I thought, that sounds interesting, something new. So I went with him to the dean's office. And then he went off to be the president of the University of Maine, his alma mater. Mm-hmm. And I stayed with the next dean, who I had also known since he was an undergraduate. And then when Mr. Young came back to Wisconsin, Fred Harrington lured him back. He was to be a vice president, except before he got here, the chancellor had retired or resigned, and they popped him into that job. Well, he wrote to me, Mr. Young did, and said, "Why don't you come and work for me again?" And I was perfectly happy where I was, but I thought, this is probably the last chance there will be to make a change. By then I was past 50, you see, and you don't change in the last few years. So I went with him to the chancellor's office. And there were many times during those, shall we say, active years of the late 60s and early 70s when I said, "Look what you got me into." But we survived, and I retired in 1975, and was very contented being retired until a couple of years ago when the part-time secretary that Mr. Young had moved away, and he said, "Why don't you come back to work?" And I thought, well, okay, for a couple of years, and so that's where we are. It's just, I work just 2 days a week. So I cover a long period, as you can see, from 1939.
Mm-hmm. Do you have much contact with the department once you moved out in the dean's offices?
Not really, no. That because there simply wasn't the opportunity, and there were too many other things.
I'm sure you were busy enough
with the... Oh, heavens. Yes, but the dean's office was a very pleasant experience because you were in touch with the whole college. You know, we all of the different departments in it, and they all have their peculiarities and strengths and weaknesses, and it was fun. The whole thing has been fun. I mean, I've never had a job I didn't enjoy, but there were times when the chancellor's office wasn't very enjoyable. But those, you survived those.
So when you were first starting to work for the department, was it just Alma Bridgman and yourself, or were there
No, I shouldn't say that. There were two of us, Alma and Jenny Christofferson was the other person in the office then. And she married a graduate student in political science and went to live at the University of Virginia, and she just died a year or so ago. But there were the two of us, because the office, we had sort of two offices. One, the main office where Miss Bridgman and Jenny were, and where I would be later. And then down the hall, next to the reading room, we called the John R. Commons reading room, there was an office, and I was in that one. So we always had those two offices.
I've heard from other people they finally got a secretary just for the chair as opposed to department administrator around the time that either Jim Early or Lampman, Robert Lampman's chairman.
They got a what?
There was, I guess, like one department secretary and a staff, but they got a secretary just for the business of the chair.
I don't know. You see, that would have been after I left it. No.
I think this was late 50s, early 60s. Yeah. You're talking about when there was a boom in the size of the department.
We had... Donna Meerdink worked for the department. Anna Campbell. Before that, there had been Helen Polish.
So was Anna Campbell also a student? I remember the name.
Well, let's see. I don't know whether she was. Her husband was a graduate student in physics. Whether Anna was taking work then or not.
I'd have to look it back up again. I just thought I'd come across her name before.
She's a very interesting girl. She's born in Latvia.
Huh.
And very bright, very capable. I hear from her at Christmas time. Still, he teaches at River Falls now. But what went on during those years, good heavens, I don't know. You had such routine things all the time at the beginning of the semester. the assignment committees in those days, for instance, I'm sure they don't do it that way anymore. I ran the assignment committee. Mm-hmm. I dragooned graduate assistants to help on it. I parceled out the assignments and I stood over it with an iron hand, I think, because we were the ones that had to live with the changes and so forth. And so we tried to do the best job we could to start with. And oh, there were some of those years when assignment committee really was a terrible job because we had such hundreds of students, you know, especially right after World War II. Ah, when we had to have great lecture sections, 500, 600, whatever. Music hall was the largest. Professor Kiekover had that, but then we had a couple of other lecture sections in Ag Hall. And Professor Kiekover, of course, had been a popular lecturer for so long. Mm-hmm. He was a kind of orator. His father had been a minister, and he had sort of inherited this oratorical skill. Mm-hmm. And so he was a very popular lecturer. And during those years, I can remember students coming, protesting at being put into one of the other lecture sections, saying, "I have to have Mr. Kiekover. My father had Mr. Kiekover," and all this sort of thing. you did the best you could with that, but it was kind of funny. And then, I don't know, I can't think, you see, of what was going on that was of particular moment in the department. There was a lot there was some dissension. I'm sure you've got many reports on Walter Morton, mm-hmm. who was a very prickly character in many ways. I was one of the few people I think he never fought with. I really don't know why. He and Alma Bridgman were like a cat and a dog. But because he resented her authority, really. Mm. And she had a lot of authority that had just grown over the years because she had assumed it. She did the job. Mm-hmm. And so that gave her the authority. And he resented that very much. So he would come storming in about one thing or another. But I think the only time we ever had any words of, I was the one who was doing the storming. He had been very unkind and unjust to the girl who was doing our mimeographing upstairs about something she had done. Mm-hmm. And he had criticized her unjustly, and I went in his office and dressed him down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And said, you know, if he had any complaints, he was supposed to come to me, and he had no business browbeating her, blah, blah, blah. And it so took him aback, I think, that it was as though a setting hen had come off the nest, you know, and flown at you suddenly. He never did that again. But I had wonderful working relationships with all of the people in the department. The graduate students were my friends, which is how I got tied up with Mr. Young, because when he came as a graduate student, he and his wife were about my age, and we just became very good friends, and we have been ever since. Mm-hmm. Which has made a wonderful working relationship because, you see, each of us knows how the other one thinks. We've worked together for so long. Mm-hmm. But the points of dissension during those years, see, I probably was less involved than almost anybody because I couldn't take sides. I had to work with everyone, and so I guess I let it sort of roll off my back. Mm-hmm. And Alma Bridgman took the brunt of a lot of it, mm-hmm. which, of course, she brought on herself, too, in some ways. She was not the easiest person to get along with, and yet we got along very well. I always felt she was genuinely fond of me. Mm-hmm. She never had any children of her own, you know, and I was sort of we all were the ones that she had trained, mm-hmm. and she never got over that. Even after she had retired, she would come back occasionally to visit, and Mr. Young and I were still the young things that she had trained, you know. That was, so we got along very well. She would exasperate me beyond words sometimes, but I knew that she always had the best interests of the department at heart, and you couldn't fault her for that.
Did she continue working with working as an instructor?
Yes, she taught quiz sections for all of the years until Professor Kiekhofer died. I think not after that. She had helped him revise his textbook. He had written the textbook that they used, you know. And she had done the manuscript work on the first edition. Well, by the time the second edition came along, I was working there, and so he had me do some of the typing for him. Mm-hmm. And the third one, I did all of the manuscript. Hmm. I typed, I proofread, I did the whole thing. And he paid me $500, which in 1951 was a small fortune. I was so rich I went to Europe. I had bought war bonds during the year that we were in Detroit when I was over there, because federal employees had to buy them. It was insisted upon. Mm-hmm. And so I had those, and then this $500 that he gave me, burning a hole in my pocket, of course. And I went to Europe. Mm-hmm. So I've always been grateful. That started me on a itchy-footed traveling, I guess you'd call it. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway.
Well, I had a question about the World War II years. Looking back on that, some of the archive stuff on the World War I years, there were some splits in the department about supporting or not supporting the war effort. Was there anything like that during
no,
the war?
No, not at all. Mm-mm. One of the biggest changes during the war was the fact that, of course, we had very few male students, mm-hmm. and especially graduate students. And so to teach quiz sections, you know, mm-hmm. they drew anybody they could. Two women who had been retired for years came back and taught quiz sections. Madge Pryor Glicksman.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and Peterson, what was her name?
Mary Shine
Peterson. Yeah. They came and taught quiz sections because we just had very few graduate students. Uh-huh. And
were they people that retired but stayed in Madison?
Yes. Uh-huh. They had both married professors and lived in Madison, but had not taught for some time. And I guess they're both dead now. I really don't know.
I'm not sure.
I think so, yeah. And some of the other professors, I think Professor Lesko here even taught some sections of Economics 1A during the war years too, because the need was there. See, those were the only classes that were sizable, because you had the younger students who hadn't yet been called into service probably. And more girls, of course. So while the upper classes were down a great deal, those elementary courses still were fairly sizable. And everybody pitched in. We all helped grade examinations and that sort of thing. Go ahead, ask some questions. I don't remember. I don't know what I would say.
There's a few things that I know happened during the period you were there, and you may or may not have any. Like you said, you were probably on the outside. But one was the Milton Friedman being here and resigned.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know?
I wasn't aware. I knew him at that time. I wrote letters for him, that sort of thing, when he needed anything. But the controversy was just, as I said, something over my head, and nothing that I was concerned with or even really aware of. Yeah. He was kind of an interesting little man. I think he was probably more likable than he is now.
I guess one of the other things was the thing with Groves and Morton and the Capitol
Times. Oh, yes. Well, again, because I couldn't take sides in that, I tried to stay aloof from it, I guess. And I was aware of the difficulty. And Walter Morton was a strange man. He must have had a deep-seated insecurity in himself, you know, that made him just impelled him to strike out at other people, to criticize, to tear down, and so mm-hmm. forth, as though that was how he built himself up, because there wasn't any reason for him to be as obstreperous as he was and as critical. But this, I was aware, in a sense, that there was a great deal of tension and that Mr. Groves was especially unhappy. And he was such a sweet, gentle person. Mm-hmm. But the underlying causes and so forth were not anything that I was concerned with.
Well, and I know that Groves had to step down from the chairmanship and
Dean Ingram took over. Yeah, that's right.
How did the mechanics of that work?
I really don't know, because, of course, Elma sat in on department meetings. I never did. Simply that, I guess, Walter Morton wouldn't let Harold actually conduct a meeting without his disruption. And the only way to do this, to conduct the business of the department, the dean felt, was to come in from the outside mm-hmm. and be an impartial leaderhood. That's very unfortunate, because the dean was not happy about doing that either, I should say not. But I don't know whether Walter Morton was unhappy because he had never been asked to be chairman. I used mm-hmm. to feel that perhaps that was at the bottom of some of this, mm-hmm. that he felt unappreciated. Mm-hmm. And so struck out at other people. I don't know. Maybe not.
There was just one other thing that I had come across, and I this again may be out of the field, but came across a note that Groves had been nominated as president of the National Tax Association in 1954 and then was rejected, and that was some kind of sore spot.
I don't think I knew that.
He, again, in the 60s, I think he was. Later on, mm-hmm. he was elected, mm-hmm. but apparently he was nominated, and then the membership rejected him, and that was
it. I have no idea.
Have to check with somebody else.
Yeah, 54.
Yeah.
That would have been just before I went away. I don't remember ever hearing that. Mm-hmm.
I have to come back, but somebody mentioned it. Mm-hmm. Who was? I mean, now there's quite a staff over there, including a couple people just working with graduate students. Who did the counseling of graduate students, or signing them to teaching assistants and that kind of thing?
Each professor did his own. He counseled the graduate students majoring in his particular field.
Mm-hmm.
The teaching assistants. Except for the elementary courses,
mm-hmm.
there probably were only one or two a professor would have. Like Walter Morton's money and banking
mm-hmm.
had a number of sections. He usually had somebody in mind, some graduate student that he mm-hmm. would want to have there. The same with Professor Perlman. Mr. Young taught quiz sections mm-hmm. of his, that sort of yeah. thing. And for the elementary course, it was a matter of just getting good graduate students. They had a variety of majors
mm-hmm.
because we needed so many. And
so they applied from other departments as well?
No.
A variety of majors within economics.
Yes,
yeah.
within economics. And they would apply as you apply for scholarships or something
uh-huh.
like that, you see. So we always had, there was no trouble in finding plenty of them, because we had a big graduate student body, you
uh-huh.
know. And teaching assistantships were highly sought after, because there weren't very many opportunities to earn some money. We didn't have many fellowships or research assistantships
mm-hmm.
or anything like that in those days. One or two fellowships maybe, and that was about it. So the teaching assistantships, even though they didn't pay very much by today's standards,
mm-hmm.
meant survival
mm-hmm.
to the graduate students in many cases.
So were there a lot of graduate students then that didn't have any form of support when they were here?
I wouldn't think so. I don't know, too. We had quite a lot of them. Some of them, of course, came of families that had means. They always have a mix like that. But I don't know. I guess I can't. I can't.
I just wondering because it's kind of gone through a swing just in the period that I've been here, from being pretty cushy to. One of the things I was kind of wondering about is how were women in general treated in the department? I know that there was a real minority among faculty members.
Yes, but we didn't have very many graduate students. But the ones we did have, I think, were treated very well because usually they were superior students.
Mm-hmm.
They were very good, and I'm quite sure they weren't discriminated against in any sense. In fact, I would think they might have had a little preferential treatment because there were so few of them. The ones that I remember were always outstanding students. Well, just as it's always been the case, girls have to be better than fellows or in order to be treated the same. It's always been that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Miss Bridgman would have let anybody discriminate. She would have had their heads.
I've heard a couple stories about her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She was an interesting woman. I missed her very much after she had died because it was always fun to talk with her. She had very definite opinions and never hesitated to let them be known. So the conversation with her was always stimulating. She was always interested in politics and had, again, very strong opinions about her. She was an avowed Democrat. And so it was fun to discuss things with her. After she died, I can remember the first year or two, every now and then I would catch myself thinking of something I wanted to talk to her about.
Huh. Did she get along well with everybody in the department?
No, because she's strong-minded, strong-willed, and she was brought in there by Dr. Ely to run the department because he didn't want to be bothered with details. And so he set her in that position and said, do it. And she did. And she had developed a very autocratic operation.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, some people resented that heartily, especially younger, new faculty people. It took a while to get used to this. But it was always for the good of the department. She was not in this for herself at all. Self-aggrandizement, I'm sure, never occurred to her, but this was her department, and she took the best care of it she knew how, and it stepped on some toes.
One of the, you talked about the arrangement of the staff over in Sterling Hall. Where were the graduate students and assistants? Did they have any?
They had a big office down the hall. It had been a classroom at one time, I guess, and then was made into a... It was not a very satisfactory arrangement because they're just one desk after another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many there were in that room, as many as you could get in it, of course. And then a couple of other places, and occasionally the professor who had a teaching assistant, maybe just for his one course, would give him a desk in a corner of his office, that sort of thing. We had very cramped quarters, there's no doubt about it.
I see you. Were you still there? Yeah, you were still there for the move over to...
No, I left just before that.
Okay.
Oh, I helped plan that office. I thought this was one of fate's little ironies because we had gone over those plans for years, and I had been so pleased because they let us plan the department office to face the lake instead of the professor's offices, and that was exactly the way I wanted it, and I never was there. I mean, never got to live in it at all.
Yeah.
I left... to go to South Hall, the second oldest building on the campus, you see.
Oh, that's right. Well, social science was without water for the last few days. So you didn't
really?
Some pipe broke.
Oh, good heavens.
The funny thing is that they turned the water on over the weekend, but it was off on Friday and it's off today.
Good heavens.
So everybody's running back and forth between social science and college.
Well, I should think so. That's very complicating without water.
Yeah, but it does make it a little difficult over there.
The plumbing, nothing works?
No, nothing, no water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, heat, electricity, everything else fine, but some kind of pipe broke. It's rather inconvenient.
Indeed.
That's a couple other things, just for the background for the oral history, I should ask just, let's see, they want date and place of birth.
Oh, I was born in Taylor County, Wisconsin, Medford, Taylor County, Wisconsin. November 26, 1912. I will soon be 73 years old. Think of that.
Day before my husband's birthday.
Is that right? So his occasionally comes on Thanksgiving, too. Huh?
Yeah, right. It kind of gets overshadowed sometimes. Let's
yes.
See, dates at UW, I think he gave me. I guess most of this, the rest of this I've covered in terms of what they need. I brought along a list of the, I don't know, you seem to remember everything, everybody quite well. It's just a list of people that were here. I'm going to find the right, it's all by, in order there by decades.
This is side two of the tape of Jerry Hinkle on November 11th, 1985. The speaking begins at tape mark 007.
Before I came into the department, Martin Glazer, Selig Perlman, let's go here, Whitty. Madge Pryor, see, she had retired and then came back during the war years. Paul Rauschenbusch, well...
Do you know anything about Madge Pryor's? I mean, I heard that...
She married Harry Glicksman.
Uh-huh.
He was an assistant dean in letters and science. And she didn't teach, except when she came back during those war years.
Was she part-time or full-time?
Yeah, part-time. Mm-hmm. Paul Rauschenbusch was ahead of my time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Elizabeth Brandeis Rauschenbusch was there all the time I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Morton Groves, oh, Beard Taylor, I'd forgotten him. He was principally Commerce School. He wasn't, he was only partially in ours. Arnie Skog, my gosh, I'd forgotten all about him. Jim Early, Blackie Ellsworth, Ted Morgan, Martin Bronfenbrenner. Have you seen the Bronfenbrenner notes or anything
notes.
Like that?
Ed Young told me that he'd sent it over to the department. I haven't seen it yet myself.
She wrote one. Yeah, you see, now I come in here in the middle, 39. Trumbauer, Kiekhofer, Witte, Glazer, Perlman, let's go here. Arthur Altmaier was not here. Gross, Bridgman, Brandeis, Morton, Early, Ellsworth. Bill Wilmot, yes, heavens, all the years he was here. I still hear from him at Christmas time, too. Mm-hmm. Bob Fleming, Rondo Cameron, Chair Lionel Thatcher, Jack Stockfish, Lane Miles, Ann Summer, Steiner Johnson. Goldberger, Corbell, Granick, Farrar. That's about
that's
where I get
passed,
off.
Yeah. Where is Peter Wilmot now?
Bill Wilmot.
Yeah, Bill Wilmot.
Florida. He's retired and still lives in Gainesville, where he had last taught at the University of Florida. Mm-hmm. He would give you an earful. Bill loves to talk. I sent him a newspaper clipping last year when... Rosalie Morton, Walter Morton's wife, died, because he had been quite good friends of the Mortons always. In response, he wrote me 9 pages, handwritten, but 9
uh-huh.
pages. So there's nothing Bill likes better than to talk or to write.
Well, I should get his advice from you and ask him.
Yes,
for,
I should say, I can.
We're going to be sending out letters to as many alumni and former faculty as we can find that
yeah.
we haven't already gotten contact with to ask them
about. I'll look it up and you can call me. Let's see. Yeah, when did these here? Corbell, Granick, Farrar. Yeah, well, Zellner and Holt were during, I was still around. It was the last year I was there. I just barely knew them. All of these later ones, gosh.
Yeah, there was a big influx right, oh,
I
right about
say.
The time you were leaving. Huh?
Some of them I knew, I have known, but most of them I don't. Good grief. grief, there have been a lot. I have no idea.
It's so dramatic when you put it out this way that all of a sudden there's a slew of people coming in.
Say so. Oh, but the early ones, you know, that there was such a different atmosphere through the whole university in those earlier days, because the university was still something very special, and you know, not by any means a majority of kids got to go to the university. Mm-hmm. And so it had an aura about it that I think it has not had for some years now. And maybe that was a little stuffy, and maybe it was a little snobbish, but it was also very interesting. And the older faculty members, you know, were a little on the courtly side, some of them, Mr. Kiekhofer and Mr. Trumbauer, who were very close friends, incidentally, the two of them. Mr. Kiekhofer always had a dinner every spring for his teaching assistants. And during the year, they usually met for lunch at the University Club on Fridays to talk over the next week's work. But in the spring, he would have them all to dinner. And usually this was out in the country at a place that had belonged to Mrs. Kiekhofer's family, the Owen family. And they had this lovely country house. And the dinner was done up brown. I mean, they brought in help. I mean, you had maids in aprons and so forth. And it was a sit-down dinner. And there was sherry beforehand, not cocktails, only sherry. But it was done with a great deal of style. But genuine warmth and hospitality. And Mr. Kiekhofer would get, perhaps rent a film from Visual Aids and show it. Or sometimes we played parlor games. And I will forever, I wish I remembered the rest of it, but I'm grateful to Professor Trumbauer the rest of my life for helping me to remember the presidents of the United States in order for the first ones. Because he said when he was in school, they learned a series of sentences. The first letter of each word was the first letter of the president's word. Now, I remember the first one, which is, "Will a jolly man make a jolly visitor?" Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Adams. Who's the next? Jay. And then Van Buren.
Johnson
come in there before Van Buren?
I'm not very bad.
Well,
myself.
I have to look at it. But anyway, that was the way that he learned this when he was in elementary school. There were two sentences. It stopped with Harrison because that's who was president when he was in school. But it's the sort of thing that you just remember. And then well, this is too bad to waste your tape on this sort of thing, but then you don't care, do you? I will always remember one of those parties, too, when he was showing a film. And we were sitting in the dark, of course, and the film was being shown. And Mrs. Kiekhofer passed around a little dish of mints. And I handed it to a graduate student sitting next to me. And he thought it was an ashtray. And he sat there and flicked his cigarette ashes in it. And when the lights came on and he saw what he had done, you know, the look of horror on his face was worth a million, and he hurriedly looked for a place to put it on the mantle out of sight, something like that. I'd love to see him and see if he remembers that. He probably has put it out of his mind. Well, anyway.
Well, was there a lot of other socializing among the department during
this? No, I don't think so. They used to have a reception in the fall for a number of years. I guess that was until the war years. There would be a graduate reception at the start of school to let the graduate students meet the faculty, and vice versa.
Sort of thing,
yes, And but I don't know that there was. The professors used to entertain their graduate students at their homes, I think. I don't suppose they do that anymore. I know Mr. Witte did, because they used to joke about Mrs. Whitty served the same casserole year after year. To find out if it worked, it was all right.
Uh-huh.
That sort of thing. But as a whole department, I don't think so.
Well, I know that the John R. Commons Club was started in the late 30s. And now mm-hmm. they put on a Christmas party and a fall and spring picnic.
Do they?
Yeah.
Do they really?
And going back a few years, I found like old things from, well, things from say about the mid-60s or so, that they were doing that.
Uh-huh,
but you don't remember.
They did, the Christmas thing, yes, just after I came back from Denver, I remember a couple of them that were absolutely hilarious because I was involved in them myself. Everybody was. One year they did, I trimmed a Christmas tree while Peter Steiner about four or five of the faculty members told me how to do it in economic terms, you know. And each one of them riding his particular hobby horse of his theory.
Uh-huh.
And they tried to tell me how to trim a Christmas tree, and I went on trimming it, of course, without any of them, and that turned out all right.
So
that was very funny. Yes,
they,
uh-huh.
They actually
yeah.
themselves were in
them. Oh, yes, uh-huh. And one year we did a marvelous one, a skit, a parody of My Fair Lady, that they we had some clever graduate students who liked writing that sort of thing. And it was a communist type thing. I wish I could remember. I wish I had a copy of it. It was very funny. But they did do that sort of thing. Yeah, the John R. Commons Club had some fun, I think. But when I was thinking of the department having the faculty members having parties or something together, and I don't think they did, no, not to my knowledge. So, I'm sure this isn't really very helpful to you. As I said, I just don't have very many memories because it was all fine.
Well, this has been helpful. I mean, like I said, a lot of our dates and figures and those kind of things
mm-hmm.
are coming from the paper sources, but we need some mm-hmm. real live people that were there too to get our other aspects
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm. Are you a graduate student in economics?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How far along are you?